This is MUT Radio Podcast.
Without taking too much of your time, colleagues, I've been given the responsibility to facilitate this webinar. I'll ask Dr. Kotelane to introduce formally our two guest speakers for the day. Over to you, Doc.
Thank you, Doc. And good morning, colleagues. My role as the Dean has already stated is to introduce the two esteemed guest speakers to this webinar of The World of Work is Changing. The world, and indeed the world of work, is changing all around us. We hear from the media that this new Omicron virus is highly transmissible. The very same media is telling us that for every one person that is infected, they infect no less than 2.6 to 3 people. On the other hand, we are told that the Johnson & Johnson, which is a tool to fight this pandemic, has an efficacy rate or duration of 9 months, and it requires a boost, and the country is broke. And also, just recently, maybe yesterday or a day or 2 days ago, we were informed that even the Pfizer two-dose vaccine that we thought was strong enough can evade the Delta and the Omicron. And then now we are saying, what are we supposed to do? You hear companies and indeed universities saying we are going to impose compulsory vaccination. And then we are collectively saying we don't know whether to become anti-vax or be the people that would vaccinate, but we are told that we need a booster shot, and there are people who have not even been vaccinated. And you also get companies forcing us to go back to the office, and then we say, within all this chaos of this VUCA world, what are we supposed to do as employees and as students in the case of universities? We are asking collectively, what are our rights? And then that is the very reason why we have got Imran here, to explain exactly what our rights are. We also have AJ here, who is going to share with us the debates for and against going back to work around this vaccination not having a strong efficacy rate, and with this pandemic and the rate of infection increasing, what are our rights as employees and as students? And before I go ahead and read Imran's bio, what I would want to tell you, colleagues, or share with you, colleagues, is that Imran is one of those few ethical individuals, when all around us are saying, with this pandemic, what is it in it for me? What can I steal? Can I steal PPE money? Can I steal PPEs? Can I steal the social relief grant, that 35 rand? Can I steal even the food parcels? There are still those individuals that would restore your faith in humanity. People like Imran, who are willing to give of themselves and their team and their time to good causes. I had a pleasure of listening to Imran at a conference that was held recently, was hosted by our professional body, IEAJ. And I had the pleasure of listening to Imran present. And at the end of his presentation, I was more than ever convinced that I would want to have him share this wealth of knowledge with the university community. So before the end of that very day, I wrote to Imran to ask him if he could assist in securing Imran as a guest speaker for a webinar, because the seed of hosting this webinar was planted as and when he was presenting. So within 2 days of me writing to MJ, to AJ, I received a feedback that he was willing to participate. So he is one of those few individuals that are not asking what is in it for me, but they are willing to give of themselves to these good causes. And Imran also has accepted our open invitation to partner with the department, and there is in future, and there is already a project in the works. He is going to be presenting to our students early in the year next year, our postgraduate students, which could be open to the community if they so wish, and also the unions. That would be on the collective, the future of collective bargaining in South Africa. So we are HR, so that would be a topic that is relevant to our postgraduate students, maybe even unions and other colleagues if they are interested. So there is that. So we will have that ongoing engagement with Imran. And you know that the labor legislation would be amended as we go along because our world has changed. That is why you have that thing. Without taking too much of your time, let me read his bio. Imran is a director at CDH Employment Law Firm. He has a wealth of knowledge and experience in employment law of more than 20 years. He advises on all aspects of employment law, ranging from transactions, litigation, regulatory to compliance matters impacting employment. His input is also sought regularly by the media on law issues. So don't be surprised if maybe tomorrow or the day after you see him on television. He has also acted as a judge of the Labour Court on various occasions. It cannot get any better than that. Imran has a vast experience in dealing with issues affecting employers in contentious and non-contentious matters, and provides strategies at collective and individual level. He also advises across the continent and has been the lead attorney in various precedent-setting cases. And I heard from the grapevine that he is already advising and consulting on mandatory policy in various universities. So we have the best person to share this with us because he has the knowledge and he is familiar with the higher education landscape and space. And then proceeding to the second speaker, AJ. AJ is family. You contact AJ. In 5 minutes, you can get whatever it is that you need. AJ is that interface between an individual university and other universities. And AJ is an interface between the university and the industry. Sitting here as an HOD for HRM, I am happy because I know that I've got my pulse in anything that happens in other universities and in the industry. I am kept abreast of the developments through the efforts of AJ. AJ is the research and assurance head at our professional body, SABPP. He is an experienced senior manager in human capital development at policy and strategic level and board level as well. His core purpose is the creation of value and sustainability of talent and leadership. You know, leadership in this country leaves much to be desired. He is presently, I have mentioned that he is appointed to the ministerial task team to professionalize the public service. They cannot get a better person. He has, with his colleagues, managed to professionalize the HR discipline to the extent that the HR standards that form the core of our syllabus are replicated in so many other countries. And he is a clinical psychologist as well, director at Vantage World. And you know that the national psyche is hurting. So many people have lost their jobs. So many people have lost loved ones. So our national psyche is hurting. Maybe in future, AJ might just come back and maybe present something on employee well-being in the workplace. Okay, and he has specialist experience in talent assessment and development and was previously elected as a board member of the assessment study group. These are our esteemed guests who are better poised to present these very topical issues at this time. Chair, thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Kotanang. I think now we don't waste any time. Let's go straight to Mr. Imran for the presentation. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. Dr. Kotalana, thank you for a very humbling introduction. So let me perhaps just make a disclosure that your check is in the post in respect of that introduction. So two things about that. One, there aren't checks anymore, and two, there isn't the National Post Office, so I don't think you're going to get it. Good morning, everybody. I've been asked to speak on the topic of vaccinations and what is now essentially becoming a topic relating to mandatory vaccines, both in the workplace, i.e. that's between employers and employees, and in the universities across the country, which relates to both an employment issue, i.e. from a workplace perspective, and in relation to classroom attendances, which obviously relate to students. The best place to look at the current discussion in relation to mandatory vaccines is to review what's happened over 2021. In December of last year, probably about this time, I had an interview with EMCA in relation to the question of mandatory vaccines. It was a topic that wasn't in last year, December. So I had an interview with Jeremy Nash about it. It followed an article that we published at the time in relation to the question of what was likely to happen in South Africa should there be vaccines available in 2021, bearing in mind that by that time in Europe and in the US there had already been a mass distribution of vaccines. So the question that we were grappling with as we left 2020 was to consider, well, what was it likely to be like in South Africa? The year then started out in January of this year. The first question was whether or not the continent, and whether obviously South Africa, would have access to vaccines during the course of 2021 and at what point in time. That was the first issue. In the beginning of the year, President Ramaphosa said at one of these what's now been called family meetings, no one will be forced to be vaccinated. That's what he said. Beginning of this year, it was about January, early February of this year. But as the year rolled by and vaccines became available in South Africa, we now know that there's been a very low national vaccination rate, and there's currently talk of mandatory vaccines by President Ramaphosa in his November 2021 presidential address. So there's certainly been a move over the course of the year from one, will there be vaccines, two, to there being a surplus of vaccines, initially the president saying, well, no one will be forced to take vaccines, to him now saying, well, there's potential of mandatory vaccines. So quite a lot has happened over the last year, as we South Africans are very accustomed to knowing. A lot can happen in 24 hours in this country. So what is the South African position currently? We wake up every day not knowing that we actually continue to operate under a national state of disaster. Now, what is a national state of disaster? Now, those of us that are old enough would remember the last state of emergency in 1985. The state of emergency is one level higher than a national state of disaster. That's what it is. Okay. So in legal parlance, that's what a national state of disaster is. It's one level below a state of emergency. And we've been in a state of disaster since March 2020. The last announcement was that it would be extended to the 15th of January 2022, and no doubt there will be further extensions every 30 days thereafter. It passes by most people because we've actually become quite accustomed to this. And if you watch the local news networks, you just simply see a counter every day that tells you how many days we have been in a lockdown situation. As the days go by, the national state of disaster continues. Now, it begs the question as to why there is this extension every so often for a month. The reason for that is because under the Act, the President's got to extend the national state of disaster. Oh, sorry, not the President, it's the Minister, the COCTA Minister, that's got to extend the period of disaster for every 30 days, and that's the reason we have these extensions. Globally, we know that we live in a pandemic. It's exceptional global circumstances that we currently living through. And where we currently sit in South Africa, in relation to vaccinations and COVID vaccines aside, is that there is no law currently in South Africa that mandates any vaccination. So we certainly don't have any law in the country that says you are obliged to be vaccinated for anything. Now, depending on our ages, many of us will recall when we were in school, we'd kind of get lined up and be vaccinated. Never really knew what it was about, but we'd get vaccinated. And that was against polio and a whole host of other things. The reality is, as a parent, you would know today that if you don't have your kids vaccinated, you wouldn't be able to get them into a public school. Forget a private school, you wouldn't be able to get them into a public school. So even though there's no law that says you must be vaccinated, the reality is that a school won't allow admission without a vaccination card. But all of that is outside of a legal requirement that there be a vaccination. So let's get back to the current situation in relation to COVID vaccines. At present, five universities in the country have already announced that they are rolling out a mandatory vaccine policy in 2022. So five universities have already taken that position. A number of employers have, over the course of 2021, put in place mandatory vaccine policies and have already enforced those policies in their workplaces. We know that Discovery Health received much media attention around that, but the reality is Discovery received much media coverage, but it certainly was not the first employer that went out enforcing a mandatory vaccine policy. It just attracted media attention because of who it was, and it was the first listed company to go ahead doing what it did. There's been a rollout of mandatory vaccine policies during the course of the year and in various industries across the country. We've been involved since, I would say, late January of this year in advising a number of clients in relation to putting in place mandatory vaccine policies and in relation to their rollouts. Where we are currently on that is we at the point, me personally, I'm dealing with six complaints or objections to vaccine rollouts with different employers. So currently I've got six of those on the go that we're having to deal with. What's also very important is the Minister of Labour's announcement earlier this week at the 26th annual NEDLAC summit. And I want to take you to what it is that the Minister said. In quotes at the top, he said the following. He said, "I believe that NEDLAC has provided clear advice. The NEDLAC social partners believe that the promotion of vaccines remains the most significant intervention to prevent further spread of COVID-19 and lockdowns. To intensify the vaccination program, they made proposals to the government that, number one, the health and safety direction of the Department of Employment and Labour should be strengthened so that vaccination can become mandatory where a risk assessment at the workplace requires this. I'll pause there for the moment because I'll unpack this question of this direction a little later. He goes on to say, number two, access to certain venues, gatherings and events, particularly in the hospitality sector, should be restricted to vaccinated people only. Thirdly, he says, whilst the social partners believe that vaccine mandates will pass constitutional scrutiny, that's the view, they support the work of BUSA to get a declarative from the Constitutional Court in the new year. What does that mean? I'll park that for a moment and we'll come back to it. And so this is the position that NEDLAC has taken. This was kind of suggested in November already by the President in his last address. This was confirmed by the Minister of Labour. Now, it begs the question as to what is NEDLAC, right? Now, NEDLAC is a statutory body. It was established in 1994. It's actually called the National Economic Development and Labour Council, and it comprises organised labour. So organized labor has got a very strong voice at NEDLAC, and what constitutes organized labor is federations of trade unions. So COSATU sits at NEDLAC, FEDUSA sits at NEDLAC, NATU sits at NEDLAC. It's not comprised of individual trade unions, but trade union federations. You then also have employer organizations or in the form of organized business. So BUSA, for instance, is a member of NEDLAC. And then you've got community organizations, and I couldn't give you a list of the community organizations. I don't know them offhand, but the community organizations are what's referred to as part of social partners that are determined by a minister who would be granted access to NEDLAC. So NEDLAC determines policy, and in this case you can see where the policy is going in relation to a strong voice on promoting mandatory vaccines across the country in one form or another. So let's return to this question of what is this direction that the minister refers to at this bullet point, the first bullet point, where he says the health and safety direction of the DEL should be strengthened so that vaccination can become mandatory where a risk assessment at the workplace requires this. On the 11th of June 2021, the Department of Labor issued what was called an updated consolidated direction on occupational health and safety. This is the directive that the minister is referring to. This directive in June of this year provided or expressly permitted an employer to implement a mandatory workplace vaccination policy subject to specific guidelines. One of the requirements was conducting a risk assessment. So when the minister on the 7th of December says that the DEL wants to strengthen this direction so that vaccinations can become mandatory where a risk assessment at the workplace requires this, this is already what the law provides. That once a risk assessment in an employer's workplace determines that there's justification or operational, there's not an operational justification for a mandatory vaccine policy within the business, subject to specific guidelines, it can proceed down that road. So once this had come about, it made the life of employment lawyers a lot easier in relation to advising employers with regards to mandatory vaccine policies, because up until the 11th of June, the debate on whether a mandatory vaccine policy would be legally permissible was actually the legal debate. And after the 11th of June, that debate kind of fell away, because in terms of the directive, it became lawful for an employer subject to compliance with this directive to enforce a mandatory workplace vaccination policy. Since June of this year, there's been no challenge to this law, and now we know that the DEL wants to strengthen this directive. So the signposts are there. government is moving in the direction of enforcing or granting employers, at the very least, greater powers in order to mandate vaccines within their particular workplaces. Now, what the current direction does provide for, and this refers or relates to the last bullet point, is that the DEL in this direction has cautioned employers to ensure that the rights of employees to bodily integrity and religious freedoms and beliefs are taken into account. So what an employer needs to have regard to, specifically have regard to, is in the rollout of a vaccine in its workplace, and no different to a university setting, that whoever enforces the policy must have regard to bodily integrity rights and the rights to religious freedoms and beliefs of the individual. And what the direction does also specifically make reference to is that the implementation of a vaccine policy must be based on mutual respect and one that achieves a balance between public health imperatives, the constitutional rights of employees, and the efficient operation of the employer's business. So it's a balancing act between those three. And in effectively, in my experience, public health imperatives and the efficient operation of the employer's business is to a large extent tilting in favor of implementation of these policies. So can an employee object to being jabbed at the workplace, or a student object to being jabbed at a campus? The simple answer to that is yes, you can object to it, but you can only do it on very sound grounds. And currently there's only two grounds that an objector can slot into. One is there is a medical reason why the person should not be exposed to a vaccine, or to a religious exemption. So effectively, those are the only two grounds upon which anybody is able to object to a vaccine. Now, I mentioned to you a little earlier that I'm currently dealing with six objections with different employers. And the basis of those objections range from, well, this is a ploy by Bill Gates in pharmaceuticals, and it's part of a depopulation agenda to depopulate the earth, or something of the sort. So these are all of the conspiracy theories we've all seen on YouTube and seen on WhatsApp and everywhere else. Those sort of conspiracy theories are unhelpful. Anybody who wants to rely upon this as a reason not to be vaccinated is not going to come home on that sort of an argument. So it then begs the question, can an employee be dismissed, or could students be refused access to campuses where they refuse to be jabbed? And the answer to that is yes, because the constitutional right to bodily integrity and the constitutional right to religious beliefs can be limited. And the directive already allows for exemptions on grounds of religious belief and medical exemptions. And unless you fall within those grounds, it becomes very difficult for anybody who objects to the vaccination to say, well, I refuse to do it and it's unconstitutional. So public spaces can have a fair discrimination policy based on a limitation of access to a public space such as a university, based on an individual not being vaccinated. So what then is the reference by the minister to Bursa's constitutional court approach with regards to a declarator? What does it mean? That simply means that Bursa has indicated that it may want to approach the constitutional court in the new year to get an order from court to say that an employer enforcing a mandatory vaccine policy would not be unconstitutional. That's what it is. And it's a preemptive move on the part of business to avoid individual employers then having to take up an argument on its own by particular employees that say, well, outside of religious or medical grounds, I have any other ground upon which to object to a vaccination, and therefore compelling me to be vaccinated is unconstitutional. The moment you have a constitutional court judgment that says otherwise, there's no argument to be made. So this is a very smart strategic move, preemptive on the part of Busa, that's been the cat's been let out of the bag by the minister in relation to what their intentions are. Now, turning to the next slide, you may think that I lost my marbles when I got to this slide because forgot that I was typing the same theme over and over. And I made mention of this concept of consultation and sensitivity. The question of vaccines and having people be vaccinated is a sensitive issue, and any employer that loses sight of that is insensitive, in my view. To say to employees that I require you to take a vaccine in order to continue with your employment is an emotional issue, and employers need to be alive to that fact. I've advised, I can think probably off the cuff, no less than, I would say, 15 employers in different industries in relation to vaccine rollout since January of this year. And I can tell you the one point that was overly emphasized in every one of those particular matters was the importance of consultation with employees, trade unions, and anybody that's got an interest in the matter before there was implementation or rollout of a mandatory vaccine policy. No imposed policy will result in a huge uptake unless there's absolute buy-in by those people that have to actually take the jab. So in the absence of consultation and in the absence of being emotionally intelligent and sensitive with regards to the issue at hand, an employer that simply sends out communication to staff or to students and says, well, this is our policy, take it or leave it, tough luck, is asking for trouble. So consultation is certainly an absolute imperative and is the starting point for an ultimate rollout of a mandatory vaccine policy. Now, so I'll give you a sense of where things are currently. I said to you I'm dealing with 6 objections. By mid-November of 2021, there were 10 dismissal claims that were already referred to the CCMA, and the CCMA director had issued a notice to say that these particular matters will be, I think the word he used was ring-fenced or red-lined, something of the sort, because of the national importance associated with these dismissal claims, and they'll be specifically managed by the CCMA. There's been no outcomes issued by these particular matters, but we eagerly await to see what the outcomes of the CCMA are going to be with regards to dismissals of employees who refuse to be vaccinated. I don't want to spend too much of time getting into the debate of the forms of bases an employer can utilize excuse me, in order to give effect to what we believe would be a fair basis for dismissing an employee who refuses to be vaccinated outside of the exemptions. But we certainly wait with bated breath to see what the outcomes of the CCMA will be in this regard, and that would obviously follow in the next couple of months. I want to conclude with an article that I picked up in the Sunday Independent on the 19th of November 2021. I'm not going to venture any opinion on this, but I'll read the quote to you from a Mr. Skalk van der Merwe, who identifies himself as a human rights activist. He says that he insists that employees who reject forced vaccination from their employers can enforce their rights and are protected by the Labor Relations Act and the Constitution. Those are his views. He then says his advice to employees is that they should not accept bullying, threats, bribes, coercion, disciplinary action, or suspension for exercising their human rights against forced COVID-19 vaccination. He implored workers to say, "I'm exercising my non-derogable right in terms of Chapter 2 of the Constitution. I choose not to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Furthermore, I exercise my rights as an employee and remind you of Section 192.2 of the Labor Relations Act, Radio Schedule 8, if I am dismissed unfairly, I'll refer the case to the CCMA or to the Labour Court." Mr. Van der Merwe is then quoted in the same article of saying that by the 19th of November, he'd already received more than 5,000 complaints of human rights infringements against employers who have forced their staff to be vaccinated. So I'm not going to comment on his views. I'm going to say the following. I know I'm speaking to a university audience and specifically to students. When I was at university, you couldn't get to a weekend if you didn't quote any Bob Marley. So I'll leave you with this rhythm. Don't let them change you or even rearrange you. I think that makes lots of sense. But know this here on a serious note that the reality is the law is lining up on the basis that an employee who refuses without proper justification to be vaccinated, that this principle that's taken root around the world of no jab means no job is going to become a reality in the months that follow. That ends my presentation. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you very much.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.